You will find the sun within yourself if you will look. You will find the sun within yourself if you will look. This is the thought for today from Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. Just in case you didn't know. You will find the sun within yourself if you will look. One of our biggest circumstances in life is that we think we're looking outwardly. We think that we're looking at the world and we're looking around the world and seeing what's all going on in the world, and we think that that's all pretty wonderful. That's a pretty exciting world out there. But that's not the world out there. The world that we see out there is what is inside of us. You cannot see anything outside of yourself unless it's within yourself. For your logical understanding, we can say you cannot see anything outside of yourself except through your own attitude, through your own awareness of who you are. Now, many times I will say, Sylvia, and Sylvia will be cooking, or she'll be doing something else, or her attention will be somewhere else. She won't hear me. And I'll say, Sylvia, and her attention's still somewhere else. She doesn't hear. And then Ellen sees my plight, and Ellen shouts, Sylvia, her's speaking to you. And Sylvia turns, yes, what is it you'd like? You know, her attention is totally somewhere else now. Why did I create her having her attention totally somewhere else? Why did I create Ellen speaking up and shouting so that to get Sylvia's attention? Ellen has a very powerful voice, and she gets attention very easily. Why did I do that? Why did I even want Sylvia's attention in the first place? Why did I speak up in the first place? Now, all of those things are things from my inner self, my inner choice. Now, I could have gone out and walked the hills and talked to myself. I didn't have to talk to Sylvia, but I wanted to talk to Sylvia. So I had to get her attention. Why did I create myself having difficulty getting her attention? Why did I create Sylvia being difficult to flag down and let her know that I wanted to talk to her? Why did I do that? Well, we don't always know these reasons, but we do. Why is it that Ellen could speak up and get Sylvia's attention, where I did not speak loud enough to get Sylvia's attention? Why is it that Ellen has trained her voice over the years to be clear and loud and powerful? And why is it that I have apparently trained my voice to be a little more gentle and a little more less commanding, just more informative? That's just the way it is. Could I speak up with authority like Ellen does? Could I say, Sylvia, come over here. Oh, sure, what would you like, you know? Why don't I do that? Why do I do it so mildly and so gently? Well, I am creating a new image. Yes. And the new image is one of just gentle sharing, not a bunch of, you know, kicks in the butt and a bunch of clucks over the head with a 2x4. Just gentle sharing. And as Confucius would say, I will speak. And if no one listens, then I won't speak. And I doubt that Confucius spoke very loud. I doubt that he ranted and raved over the crowds. I think he spoke to just a small group and shared his ideas with a small group. Jesus did the same thing. He shared his ideas with a small group, the disciples. Oh, true. He spoke on the Mount, and he had 5,000 people there several times. But he spoke to them also in an interesting way. How did he speak to them? Did he shout? No. Did he raise his voice? Or did he speak to them through their consciousness, so that The last person heard him as clearly as the first. Can we do that? Can we share when we want to share? So the last person, as well as the person nearest to us, hears just as clearly and just as perfectly anything that we want to say. Well, you'll find the sun within yourself if you look. We will find the talent to do anything we want to do within ourselves if we'll look. Now, if the queen walks into the room, and everyone knows it's the queen, the room becomes deathly silent. And then the queen says to her aide, "Oh, will you bring me a glass of water, please?" And so the aide goes over to get the water. Meanwhile, at the farthest end of the room where the water is, that person heard that the request was there and set out the glass and the pitcher so that the queen could have the glass of water. Because they heard, because they were tuned in to hearing. Now, what if the room were filled with clamor, filled with noise, filled with a lot of confusion, and the queen walked in and said, "I'd like a glass of water." Do you think that the people at the back of the room where the water was would hear it just as clear as the ones in front? You bet. What was the queen transmitting? The queen was transmitting an idea, a concept. She was transmitting her thought. And she wasn't transmitting it saying, "I see this here, and haka paka paka," you know, in her wonderful, magical, mystical way of making things happen. She just, with conviction, knows that everyone responds to her every need. Did she ask to be queen? She was born that way. Did she live her life as a queen with everyone waiting on her and at her beck and call? Yes. Does she think she has to shout ever? If she does, she's not a very good queen. All she has to do is say, "Sylvia, I'd like a glass of water." So Sylvia tells Paul, "Paul, the queen would like a glass of water." Paul tells Ingeborg, Paul says, "The queen would like a glass of water." And then Ingeborg shouts, "The queen wants a glass of water!" And Ingeborg, he forgot. He just passed it along. Passed it along. And you see, even though we are talking about physically passing along, when you're in charge of yourself, your own inner sun, it shines out and accomplishes whatever you want. Would a person who was a pure, beautiful, fabulous person go around with a foul mouth? Would a person who was a pure, fabulous, beautiful person be sharing beautiful thoughts often? Mm-hmm. So, you see, you'll find the sun within yourself if you look. If we look outwardly, and we want to look at the unhappiness of the world, we'll find it. Now, if we want to look outwardly and look at the happiness of the world, we'll find it. Because it's all attitude. It's all our own inner sun. What is our own inner sun, and how does it shine? What is it radiating upon? What is it sharing upon? What is it revealing? Is your inner sun revealing your own confusions or your own confidence? Is your inner sun revealing your own lack of knowledge or your utter wonderful wisdom? What does your inner self show? What does it reveal? Who are you? Are you wise? Are you intelligent? Are you thoughtful? Are you courteous, kind, loving to your mom and pop and stuff? You know? What are you? This you have to decide. This you have to decide. Now, just a little aside to that, our friend Paul here, he can be loving to his mother and father. "Hi, Mom." She says, "Hi, son." Sylvia, on the other hand, can't do that. Her mother and father are moved on to another dimension. And so you can't say, "Hi, Mom, how you doing?" Oh, you do, huh?
Again. I can.
You can. Mm-hmm. You see, but did she say, "I do it"? She says, "I can." Okay. Yes, you can. But Do you do it? No, because you think they're on another dimension. Now, where are Paul's parents? Are they on another dimension? Sometimes, huh? But Paul's parents are thoughts in his mind. They're his attitude about them. Now, some people have parents, and they feel they cannot communicate with their parents. They cannot call their parents. They cannot talk to their parents because their parents don't understand them. Do you understand? And so, do they communicate with their parents? No, they go their own way. And then, all of a sudden, they become balanced, and then they come back and they expect their parents to be balanced. Well, now, are their parents balanced when they come back and they're balanced?
Yes.
That's right. If anyone comes back and they say, I'm all balanced now, and my mother and father just don't understand me, who's balanced? Not them. You see, they still live in the past. And we can live in the present and let our own inner sun shine just where we are, having no relationship to the past, no relationship to anything we've ever done before. That's a hard lesson to come to, because we don't like to give up our unhappinesses. We don't like to give up the idea that we dislike somebody, or that somebody hurt us or misused us. Now, for instance, if you were married and you were separated from your husband or wife, and then all of a sudden your husband and wife came back and said, I'd like to be remarried again. Now, why would they come back and say that to you if it weren't something in your consciousness? What would happen if you were remarried? Would you be looking at them, whoever they are, in the sunlight of your heart, in your own inner light? Or would you be looking at them in the past, of what caused them to leave in the first place? And if you ever live in the past, the present has no meaning at all. The sunlight that you shine today is insignificant if you are going to let the shadow of the past hold it in abeyance. And this is what people do. Now, are you one of those people? Or are you one of the people who that you find your sun inside yourself and you let it shine? Are you one of the people who glow outwardly every time you walk around? Do people look at you and say, hey, I like that person? What do you mean you like that person? You don't even know them. That's okay, I like them. And then you say, oh, I don't like that person. What do you mean you don't even know that person? They got a nice smile on their face. They got nice looking clothes about them. They're well-mannered and so on. Why don't you like them? It's something that doesn't touch me right, you know. You see, we know. We know inside of ourselves always who is right and who's not right. We know inside of ourselves always what is for our highest and our best. And we walk away from that knowledge by looking at appearances. And we say, oh, surely, that's good. I was looking at the moon this morning. And as I looked at the moon, it was a full moon, glorious, and just so beautiful up there. And I thought, my friend Edgar Mitchell went up there and came back and had a good time. And he did all sorts of new things in his thinking system because he'd been there. But of course, that's not true. His things in his thinking system had always been there. He merely enlivened them by the experience of going to the moon. And I thought, well, now what about this when everyone should be able to go up and come back? What about this other rockets that blew up, you know, and people got killed in them? And why didn't they get to the moon? Why didn't they get to enjoy that wonderful experience? Well, because they had doubt. I would say all of the astronauts aboard that faith ship had doubt. You say, well, that can't be. Why would they all go up? They had doubt. They had doubt. They were fearful of something. Now, you see, on 9/11, the people aboard the aircraft, if any of them had stood up and said, no, you know, I will not let you use this plane to damage anything, to hurt somebody, I mean, if we must die, we must die. So we'll stand up and say no. If the people had done that, mm-hmm. the rest of them would have gotten up too and supported them. And so, you know, so what? Be killed that way or be killed another way? But be killed for principles, standing up for what you believe, for what you know is right. And the guys would have backed off. They would have backed off. Even though they had the upper hand, they would have backed off because they're frightened that everybody's not frightened of them. Because that was their mission, was to frighten others. And as Franklin Roosevelt said, the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. So what are they fearing? Nothing. But they are fearful people. That's fear is what they, their trademark. Terrorists and fear go hand in hand. Now, if you are not afraid of their fear, they have no weapon. They cannot do anything. So if you, like I told you about Millie, remember Millie? Millie the black Doberman Pinscher? Mm-hmm. I was walking through the woods and I heard a lady calling, Dobie, Millie, come on now. And I was walking along, and then all of a sudden I heard this bounding noise coming through the brush, big black thing, you know. So I got down on my one knee. I wasn't praying. I got down. I said, Millie, is that you? Come on, Millie. And Millie came wagging her tail and lashing, licking me up, you know. Still a big black dog with lots of big teeth and stuff like that. And I said, Millie, do you realize your mommy's calling you? Now you go home. And of course, Millie didn't go home. Millie followed me on my walk totally until I got back to my house. And then when I got inside, I kept the dogs inside. I said, now you guys stay inside. And so I went out there about an hour or two later. Millie was still there. And then later in the morning when I went out, she wasn't there anymore. She went home. But now I could have been very fearful. I could have, oh my God. And that fear would have empowered Millie to do what Millie could do. Mm-hmm. Millie could be a vicious dog. That was what they had her for. They had her for a guard dog around the house. And here she was out walking around, you know, having a good time, looking for fun things in the woods. And she found me. And I found her. And I just let my inner sun shine. And I said, Millie, come on now. Now, if I stayed standing and a little fearful, Millie, come on now. If I'd been authoritative to Millie instead of loving, she might not have been taking the same path. But you see, we have the opportunity to always be the master. We have the opportunity to always let our inner sun shine. We have the opportunity to be in charge whenever the terrorists or any of these other things come into our life. And right now, the world is experiencing the terrorists because they're having a ball. People are scared of them. And people are, the governments are building up great efforts to protect themselves. You can't protect yourself from fear. There's no way. The only way you can protect yourself from fear, if that is what you're going to do, is to fill yourself with love. If you fill yourself with love, there's no place for fear. There's no place for fear. And all of these people who were playing the game of fear, there's nobody playing with them anymore. Nobody afraid of them. And what difference does it make if you die? It's only a matter of, are you happy while you're living? People come put a gun to your head and you say, well, you're shooting, you know. I don't know why you'd want to do that. That's silly, you know. I mean, and mean it. Mean it. And if you're frightened, anything you say, pow, you know, they shoot you anyhow. Because they love the creation of fear and the way that it sort of flows upon itself and grows upon itself. They love that. But if there's no one to fear, I've given you lots of illustrations of being master of fear. And this is what you want to do. It's not a matter of being master of fear. What is it, please?
Liking myself.
Being master of love. Thank you. Liking yourself, yeah. When you like yourself, you're master of love. But it's not a master of fear, but a master of love. If you exacerbate the thing you're not wanting, you're empowering it to be greater and greater and greater. But just empower the love, empower the joy. And anyone who's got a hang up on anything, you just go up to and say, hey, is there something I can do to help you? No, you're the problem. Oh, sorry to hear that. I think I'm doing okay. Where am I the problem? See, agree with your adversary quickly. Where am I the problem? What can I do to change or to help? Well, you see, once you have given in to them, and not given in to them, but once you have made them face what they're doing, they realize, hey, that's really not what I was going to do anyhow. That doesn't make me happy either. But you have to be so secure in yourself. You have to be so in love with yourself. You have to like yourself so much. And you have to be the master of love. And when you're the master of love, then fear has no power for you. I told you on the aircraft carrier how the kamikazes were coming down, and I was laying on my cot there watching the guys with the 5-inch guns shooting away, boom, 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 40 millimeters and stuff. And they said, Barley, what the hell's wrong with you? You're out here on deck and, you know, laying on your cot there in your shorts in the sun reading books on philosophy. And I said, hey, you want me down in my bunk? If the ship sinks, I got to climb up those stairs to get up here. At least up here, if something happens, I can jump right overboard, you know. You know, just join the sharks. You know, but no. And then next thing you know, our gunnery area where we were didn't have to shoot so much because we were not generating fear. We were generating love. And so the kamikazes didn't come to our side of the ship. They came to the other side. But they didn't come and bother us. We didn't have to go shooting away at them. But you see, this is what love does. Love for yourself first and then for your world. No one can invade that and damage that. Very true. So you will find the sun within yourself if you look. You'll find love within yourself if you look. You'll find peace and joy and harmony within yourself if you look. But of course, if you don't look, you don't find anything. But I know that you're looking. I love you.
I love you.